Welcome, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. There are almost 400,000 children in foster care across the United States. 60,000 kids live in foster and group homes in California. One of our guests today came home from school one day to find that his foster mother had just moved and he was locked out of the house. Others talk about social workers who ignore them or don't believe them. So today we're going to ask, what is the day-to-day reality for the thousands of kids who are wards of the state? Many ended up in the system after experiencing physical abuse, neglect, or abandonment. Once placed in foster care, children are given to licensed foster families or group care facilities, while social workers and judges work with them and their families towards safe reunification or another permanent living situation. Within the foster care system itself, children still face unpredictable living situations and are often shuttled between different families over the course of their stay in the system. Young people remain in the system until they're adopted by a permanent family or are reunified with their own families, or they age out of the system. So what are some of the biggest challenges that foster kids face, and what do they want from the system? What insight and ideas do they have to improve it? Well, to talk about that with us, we're joined by Heather Matheson, who entered the foster care system when she was 13 years old. She's had four placements, some good, some bad, and as she says, some really good. She's a student now at San Francisco State University, and she's in her fourth year there and is studying visual communications design. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Holly.
Thank you for being here. We're also joined by Katina Jackson, who spent time in foster care in San Francisco, which she entered when she was 4 years old. She's been an advocate with California Youth Connection now for 7 years since she turned 18 and has been awarded for her leadership and advocacy on behalf of foster youth. Hi, Katina.
Hello.
Good to have you here. We're going to be joined in a minute by Joseph Baquit, who grew up in Southern California and entered the foster care system when he was just, when he was 11 years old. And he is a student at UC Berkeley. He'll be joining us in just a moment. But let me hear from Heather and Katina first. So we're going to get into your personal experiences with the foster system and your insight into it. But let's just do a quick round of, if you could fix one thing about the system right now, something that's glaring for you, what would it be?
I think that one of the things I think is most important that needs to be fixed about the foster care system is better foster homes for these kids. And by that I mean like with foster parents who are more caring, who are all about the kids and making sure that they have the best experience they can within the system.
How about you, Katina?
For me, I truly believe that youth that are not in foster care have the chance to leave home after 25, and we shouldn't be getting kicked out of doors at 18 nor 21. And we need a more family structure because we're getting taken away from our family. But when you look back on it, I don't remember ever getting a chance to sit down and actually seeing my family once I was taken away.
Not even in dependency court?
No. I didn't even think about asking, do I have any siblings, until I was 19 and I got to see everyone and I'm like, we're all grown. We barely know each other.
How many siblings did you have?
I have one biological sister and six brothers.
Uh-huh. And you didn't meet them until you were out of the system and,
out of
and
the system.
19 years old.
Yeah.
So let me hear from each of you about your own personal experience within the system, the foster care system. Katina, you went into foster care when you were just 4 years old.
Yes.
And what was that? Where did you go? What happened?
I remember my mom leaving me at her sister's home, and I was staying with my aunt for the weekend. And I remember my aunt saying she was going to Vegas and she needed a babysitter. So one of her friends that it's a muni driver here in San Francisco took me in for the weekend, and she showed me what love was. And I told my aunt that I didn't want to come back home with her at four, that I wanted to stay where I was. And that's all I remember. And I see her vaguely, but I just know I grew up with her family friend.
With your mom's family friend?
Yes.
And it was an actual foster care situation?
Yes.
And so, but you say that when you're about, so, and you say this was a pretty good placement?
Yes.
You had a good experience, but you acted out as a teenager and ended up in a group home. What
yes.
was that like, to go from a family home to a group home?
It was scary. I'm more sheltered. I was the only teenage girl in my home, so I got what I wanted. So when I got to a group home, when I needed essentials, it was scary that we had to steal things and that the group home wouldn't provide things for us, and that we had curfew. And I never heard the word curfew because I came home when I came home. So it was really hard, and I had to eat when they told me to eat. I felt like I was in jail, but that's not what the foster care system should be about.
So tell us a little bit more about what it's like to live in a group home.
It's structured. You have chores. You can't sleep with the door closed. You have to wash your clothes when they tell you to wash your clothes. And if you don't do your chore, you don't get the allowance for the week, which is kind of backwards. The staff are kind of like a 9-to-5. They come in, they switch off. And it's really scary because you don't get a connection, because when I leave that morning, when I come back home, it's another staff person in the home.
And did you feel like those staff people were caring?
To be honest, one. The other ones I really didn't care for. They had like a little notebook and they used to write everything down. Like, oh, Katina went to the bathroom at this time. Katina got home at this time. I feel like they were just micromanaging me and not really helping me be the independent person that I wanted to be.
So what was it like for you when you turned 18 and aged out of the system? This is before AB 12 existed, and AB 12 now closes that gap where a lot of foster kids would just end up on the street at 18, kicked out of their group home, kicked out of their home with a brown plastic bag full of their stuff. AB 12 now, which these two here with me, Heather and Katina, both advocated for, now allows foster kids to get some support post-aging out of the system, post-18. Until what, 24? How old is?
21.
21, okay. So, Katina, what happened to you when you were 18 then?
I was kicked out. Had a brown bag, more like black bag. Bags that I took everywhere with me. Even though I didn't get to pack my group home stuff, I got a 7-day notice right before my 18th birthday. So I was basically AWOL'd because I didn't come back home. So all my stuff that I did get, I don't know who packed it. I only got half of my stuff. So someone either went through my stuff and kept what they liked. So I got, it was kind of like Christmas without a Christmas tree, and I'm standing outside, where am I going to go with these trash bags? So it was scary.
Where did you go?
I lived with my boyfriend's parents for a while. That didn't really work out, but they let me stay there. And then I kind of just bounced around, and it was very scary because once you're out the system, I'm used to calling my social worker, I'm used to calling my attorney. I had no one else to call. So then I found CYC, or California Youth Connection.
All right, we'll hear about California Youth Connection and how it affected your life and helped you become this advocate for foster youth and former foster youth. Heather, tell us about your experience in foster care. You entered foster care placement when you were 13?
Yeah, I entered when I was 13 years old. Before that, CPS had been called on my family
Child Protective Services.
Yeah, Child Protective Services had been called on my family a few times. We had a history of my parents' abuse and drug use. The night before I got taken away, my parents had been fighting, and my dad got out a gun and said he was going to kill my mom and me, because I don't really know. He was upset with her at the time. So that was really scary, and the next day I went to school and told a teacher at school what had been happening. Then she went and like called CPS and said, you know, you have to go and talk to them. They came to school and told me that I wasn't going to be able to go home that day, and I was going to need to go into a foster home. And my teacher, who came in with me because I was too scared to talk to them by myself, said that she didn't want me going into foster care with strangers and that she would take me into her home. So we went to the police station that evening. They did their fingerprints and all the paperwork and took me home with them. That home worked out for about a year. And then, it wasn't really working out after that. They had kids that were a lot younger and didn't really know how to take care of a 13-year-old who had been through so much trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent me to live with my aunt and uncle, which was about 45 minutes away from my high school. And so I was commuting from Simi Valley to the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles. And I lived with them all of my 10th grade year. And then that wasn't really working out because they wanted me to move schools because it was too hard to get me there. And I wasn't really interested in doing that. I was on the track team and school was kind of my safe spot.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to change schools. So they were like, all right, well, then you need to go live in a foster home. So I remember I got home from school one day and my social worker was there. And I could tell they were already discussing, you know, where I was going to go. And I felt, you know, like it was really out of my hands. There was nothing I could do. And then they had decided I was going to go live in a group home with five other girls, or not a group home, like a foster home that had five other girls in North Hollywood. So, I packed up all my stuff and moved into that home. I was the only one that spoke all English there. Everyone else spoke Spanish, and that was really like a culture shock for me. I had a really hard time communicating with the girls, and a lot of the girls were, you know, doing drugs and running with really bad crowds, which wasn't really me. So it was definitely a weird experience. There were bugs in the house, and it was a lot of rules. You had to be home by 9, and the kitchen closed at 9, so if you didn't eat before 9, you didn't get food that night. We got an allowance, $10 a week, and I don't know, there wasn't very much love in that house. You know, I felt completely disconnected from them as a whole and really uncomfortable. There were bugs in my bed and in my drawers. So then I told a friend at school that that home wasn't, you know, what was happening at that foster home, and he was appalled, and went home and told his parents. And then I'd say by the end of the week, I was living at their house, and it was great. And I've stayed there since. When I go back to LA to visit, I stay with them, and it's been really great.
So they've really become your family in a lot of ways.
They are my family.
And what kind of experience did you have in terms of the court trying to reunify you with your biological family? Was that an experience that you had?
Yeah, I mean, we tried to go through a reunification process at the beginning. I think it lasted maybe a year.
Did you want to reunify?
I think I was kind of open to the idea at first, and it slowly became apparent that that wasn't going to happen. My mom and dad refused to admit that they did anything wrong. They said I lied about everything, and that I just wanted attention. That I think my mom went as far as saying that in our new house we were moving to, I didn't get the room I wanted, so I lied about all this so I could go live in someone else's house. So she wouldn't admit to anything, and so she wouldn't go through the reunification process. My dad went to some parenting classes and all of that, anger management things, and it was working out for a little bit, but he was too wrapped up in getting back together with my mom that he would fall through on visits, and he wouldn't make it to my track meets and things like that, so it kind of fell apart. He turned into a different person when he was around my mom. He got really angry and mean and didn't care about me, so I stopped trying to.
And Katina, one thing that Heather just mentioned was the idea that the system doesn't seem set up to deal with kids who have experienced a lot of trauma. Was that something that you've noticed, and have you noticed that in your advocacy and talking with other kids?
Yes, I noticed that a lot of programs or a lot of organizations are not really geared towards trauma reformed. I know that's a big thing that's going around now. Some people don't know how to handle that we're getting kicked out of group homes, or we just got locked out of our foster home, and then we have to wake up and go to school next morning. Who do we tell that to? Mm-hmm. We don't want the county sticker car coming back to pick us up and taking us back to the same trauma you guys picked us up from. So I've noticed that it's scared to talk to teachers, even tell anybody what happened. And I am grateful that Heather did speak up, because some teachers won't even believe you. They'll believe their parent before they believe the child. And I think the system does need to work on that.
What about social workers? I know that in my conversations with foster youth and former foster youth, the social worker is this critical figure in your life. I mean, it's your interaction with the state. Katina is shaking her head right now. Tell me about your experiences with social workers and what you'd like to say to those who might be listening. First, your experience. Go ahead, Katina.
I had some good ones, also had some bad ones, and also had some ones that didn't communicate. I didn't even know what was going on. I was just a ward of a court, and someone was getting paid for me, and I didn't even realize that. So I had to learn that I had to speak up on my own, even if it was not wanting to switch school of my origin. And I didn't know that there was a bill that says foster youth are able to stay in the school of the origin. So that means I had to be difficult and transfer, and I didn't want to transfer, but I kind of got up very early in the morning and made it to that school. But then I had to realize I got to get up at 5:30. It's not going to work. Let's really think about certain things. So social workers play a big role, and I just wish my social worker would have told me certain things that I may want to be. I may think I'm grown, but I'm really not grown. So if she would have just sat down and tried to be more like a mentor instead of just meeting me before a court date or just having me sign papers. And I know there was a college tour that I wanted to go on, and she took forever to get my paper signed. And I'm like, why do I need to get a paper signed just to go on a college tour? It got signed within like 2 minutes of the deadline. She came down and dropped it off. But I felt like that was very rude, because I'm pretty sure if she needs something from me, she would call me right away.
How about you, Heather? What was your experience with social workers?
I've had very mixed experiences with social workers, but overall I'd say not very many good experiences. I had one really great social worker who really put in the time and made sure I had all my needs met. When things weren't really working out at my first foster home, she really advocated on my behalf to get me to live with my aunt and uncle, which was great. But then she got promoted and disappeared forever. So from there, all my social workers were really hard to get a hold of. I didn't feel like they had my best interest in mind. For example, when I went from living with my aunt and uncle to living in that really horrible foster home, I, you know, was calling my aunt and uncle saying, you know, I hate it here, I'm scared, I'm uncomfortable. And I also called my social worker, and they had been, my social worker had been telling my aunt and uncle and me that, you know, oh, you've just never been in a actual foster home before. This is how they work. Deal with it. It's not fun. Sorry. Rather than trying to help me figure out a better living plan for myself.
So if you were to put yourself into the social worker's shoes, what do you think the frustrations that they are probably feeling about the system are? That there aren't better placements? Or do you, what? Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they're, I mean, you know, you don't become a social worker unless you really want to help. I think they go into it really excited and wanting to do something good, but I think they get jaded by the system and, you know, they feel like there's not enough homes and there's not enough opportunities to put these kids where they should be. And I'm sure that's a really frustrating job. But regardless, the kids should be coming, like, should be the most important priority.
Anything to add to that, Katina?
I know since I do a lot of advocacy, the big thing that comes up are overworked social workers. And then I try to take that hat off and put myself in those shoes. And I also have to think about if you're a mother and you had 10 kids, you're going to make sure that all 10 kids are getting fed and they're all taken care of. And I also want social workers not to just treat us like a file and you just close the door on Friday and you come back on Monday. Because some social workers' voicemails are full. It's like, do you ever, ever answer them? And it is hard because I don't want to play the devil's advocate, but I know how it feels not to get a phone call. But I also know how it feels when my phone is off and you can't contact me. And some youth have to take responsibility on their actions. And also keep in mind that there are different levels in foster care. I was a level 10, which was a moderate. So I needed a moderate group home. I didn't need a level 14 where I needed to take medication or I was very loud or belligerent. So there are placements, I believe. It's just the youth have to stop feeling like the system failed them and also have to keep in mind that the system is there, but we have to kind of pick ourselves up and kind of be our own advocates.
That's Katina Jackson, who's a former foster youth who now lives in San Francisco and grew up here. She's an advocate with California Youth Connection. Heather Matheson entered the foster care system when she was 13 years old. She's now a student at San Francisco State University in her fourth year there. And they're talking with us about the foster care system from within, what it's like to actually be a kid growing up in that system, and what advice they have for social workers, teachers, and the rest of us ordinary citizens who care about this issue. And I want to invite you to join our conversation. If you're a social worker, we would absolutely love to hear from you. How can we make the system more child focused? What challenges do you face in your work? The number to call is 866-798-TALK. It's a toll free number, 866-798-8255. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you're a former foster youth or a current foster youth or a family who's cared for a foster child, tell us about your experience. How has it impacted your life? And what would you like to see change in the foster system? The number to call is 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. You can also post a comment at yourcallradio.org. And there are links to all of the groups that we're talking about here, California Youth Connection, Fostering Media, and so we were just talking about social workers, and Heather, at one point in an article that I read or in something that you said to me, you wrote or you said, we have all these people in our lives who didn't treat us like we were people, and then we finally get put into the system, and these are the people who are supposed to care the most about our well-being, and we're just questions on a piece of paper for them.
Yeah. When I was living at one of the last foster home that I stayed in, which was a better foster home, I'd say, like, they were the best people, so nice. I still go home to them all the time. I had a social worker who was the epitome of that. I was just a piece of paper. He'd come in. I felt like he wouldn't even look at me. He'd come sit down. He had a list, and he'd say, "How are your teeth? How's your health? How's school?" And it was like yes or no, no conversation, no anything like that. And then he'd be like, "All right, now it's time to talk to your foster parents. Go get them and go to your room or something, you know, so I can talk to them privately." And then he'd leave. And that's how it went every month or every 2 months, whenever he wanted to come. And when I aged out at 18, I remember the last visit I had with him before I left for college. He, you know, did the whole thing, you know, "How's your health? How's school?" Blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, "All right, have a nice life. Have a nice life." That definitely doesn't make me feel like he cared at all about me while I was in the system.
Did he help you make a plan for post-foster care?
No, definitely not. I don't know if it was because I was kind of like on top of my stuff and he felt like I wasn't as much in need of those types of services because I kind of had it together and was really driven and really excited to be getting to college. But regardless, I felt as if he should give me just as much of as attention as he would someone else or, you know, at least pretend to care, which I didn't feel at all.
And Jennifer Rodriguez, who was a former foster youth herself, she's now an advocate with California Youth Connection, she says that the training for social workers isn't adequate. Are there any policy changes on the horizons about that?
I know, being a part of a lot of organizations, there's a cool organization called the Youth Training Project, where we train child welfare professionals throughout California. I know we're reading into some laws in some counties that we are actually written in that you need the youth voice. So we get a special call saying a county needs us, and we go advocate and we train them and say, "Hey, this is what needs to be fixed and what needs to change." And they're former foster youth that are changing, that want to change the system, and that also can bring a perspective, because we can all read these books and all take these courses, but you don't really know how it feels to be a foster youth unless you hear from us.
So one of the things that you really advocate for is for social workers, judges, all of the people in that system to really listen more to the young people.
Yes.
And do young people often have that agency to know that they should be listened to? I mean, you talked a little bit about sort of feeling institutionalized.
In my experience from talking to youth, unless they were already in some way affiliated with one of these types of advocacy organizations, they don't really know that they have a voice and how to use that voice. At Fostering Media Connections, I'm working on a youth expert directory where I'm interviewing current and former foster youth to hear their stories, to hear what they'd be an expert on within the subject.
And we'll put a link to that at yourcallradio.org so you can get in touch with Heather and join that expert directory if you're a former foster youth who wants to speak out. We're talking about the foster care system from the inside out with Heather Matheson, who entered the foster care system when she was 13 years old. She's now a student at San Francisco State University. And Katina Jackson, who also spent time in the foster care system, entered when she was 4 years old. She's now an advocate with California Youth Connection. You can join our conversation in just a moment. We've got a full bank of callers. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. I'm Holly Kernan. We'll be right back after this break.
Listening to Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. To take part in today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We always like to hear from new voices. And if you'd prefer to write rather than call, you can email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment at the website yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11, it's an hour of international news from the BBC, and it's World Have Your Say. Stay with us.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, we're talking about what former foster youth want to improve about the care system. This is Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. Tomorrow, Rose will host an interview with Astra Taylor, author of The People's Platform, Taking Back Power and Culture in the Digital Age. Friday is our media roundtable. We speak with journalists about the week's news. And today, we're speaking with former foster youth about their experiences and ideas on how to improve the system. Heather Matheson entered the foster care system when she was 13 years old. She's now a student at San Francisco State University. She's in her fourth year there. Katina Jackson entered the foster care system in San Francisco when she was 4 years old. She's now an advocate with California Youth Connection. And we're joined now by Joseph Backett, who grew up in Southern California and entered the foster system when he was just 11 years old. He's now a student at UC Berkeley. Welcome, Joseph.
Thank you.
So scoot a little closer to the mic, and we'll get to your calls in just a minute. Let's just hear a tiny bit from Joseph about his experience in the foster care system. So you went into foster care with two of your brothers.
Correct.
When you were 11, what was that like for you when you first entered the system?
Well, it was pretty traumatic, to be honest. When we were taken away, we were actually taken away from our sister. And we were promised to be placed together. And when we were
the three brothers,
correct,
yeah,
correct.
Out of six siblings, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And when we went to the first foster home, only the eldest brother out of us three was able to stay there because of they didn't have enough room for all three of us. So it was like the social worker already broke a promise, and then me and my other brother Tarek, we went to a group home, or we went to Polinsky Center in San Diego, and after about a couple of weeks or so, we were finally able to reunite, but as time moved on, we did struggle a lot to stay together because of different behavioral issues between us and having to just move around.
And then you talked about your brother, Tarek, right?
Correct.
Who ended up in the juvenile justice system, and that really had a big effect on his experience and the services that he could access after he turned 18.
Right. This has been a big issue, actually. I've been trying to push for him to get a foster youth benefits since he's turned 18, or since he aged out the system. And what happened was he turned 18 in a juvenile facility, and this was not even a month before he was released. And because he turned 18 and he emancipated through delinquency, he cannot access any foster youth benefits.
Because he's 18, he had a criminal record. It wasn't sealed as a juvenile.
Correct. And since he emancipated in a juvenile placement, he emancipated through delinquency. Therefore, he didn't emancipate as a foster kid. And so although he was in the system for roughly 5 years prior to that, he does not receive any AB-12, and he doesn't qualify for THP, THP Plus.
What's THP?
Oh, excuse me. It's a transitional housing program. Mm-hmm. And these are some of the most vital resources for foster youth.
And those are resources that you're using yourself to attend UC Berkeley?
Correct.
We're talking about the foster care system, and we're hearing from the biggest experts in the system, and that is foster kids themselves. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to Your Call, and let's go to some of our callers. Let's go to Leslie in San Francisco. Hi, Leslie. Welcome to Your Call.
Hi. Congratulations to your wonderful speakers.
Yeah.
Really extraordinary people. I direct something called the National Girls Health and Justice Institute, and we've interviewed about 5,000 girls in juvenile detention facilities across the country, and many of them have experiences, previous experiences with foster care. And when we ask these girls what it is that they need most, they often say that they need foster homes that are monitored, where the foster parents are really, in a way, forced to behave properly to them. And I just heard the young man mention the fact that he knew someone who had been in the juvenile detention system. Could there be further comment from these wonderful people about the intersection, how foster children get into trouble with the law and how that system treats them, since there are thousands and thousands? And we don't even know how many there are. There's no information about children who crossed over from
statistics.
Foster care to juvenile justice.
Well, thanks, Thank Leslie. You. Let's hear from our experts about that, the intersections between foster care and how you're treated there and some of the rules and regulations. And does that make it increasingly likely that you'll end up in the juvenile system? juvenile justice system? Go ahead, Jessica.
Well, there, it depends actually on your placement. For example, the placement that I was in for the longest was called San Pasquale Academy, and it was a very stable placement, very consistent, and there was a lot of structure. And in that situation, me and my brother also actually went there for a little bit. We were able to kind of get a lot of benefits and become successful. It really did help us to have that structure. Whereas in different group homes or different foster homes where there's, like you said, not enough guidance really. And there is a lot of freedom. And depending again on the home and the rules and how they interact and treat the foster youth, depends on how the foster youth would turn out.
Katina, you look like you want to get in on this one. No? Any thoughts, Heather?
Yeah. In my third placement, that one that I was saying was really bad, and the foster parents, it was really only the foster mom. We weren't allowed to talk to her family. They lived in a separate part of the house and would not even look at us. But yeah, in that home, every other girl that I talked to who lived there, the other five, were into drugs and like really took advantage of the fact that our foster mother didn't care where we were as long as we were back by 9. And if you said, I'm sleeping out, that's fine. Like, she didn't care as long as you let her know. And I think that having no structure like that and a foster mom who clearly didn't care, it kind of led to them getting into bad situations.
I want to go to more callers, but you bring up a point, you know, like this idea that you're not allowed to interact with her other kids, her biological kids, makes me think about the stigma that I've heard a lot of foster kids talk about, that sense of wanting to hide the fact that you're in foster care from kids at your high school, et cetera. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, especially when I lived in that home, you know, us six girls lived in the front part of the house, and we had to stay in that kind of area, and then the kitchen led to the foster family side of the house, which we weren't allowed back there. We weren't allowed to talk to them. We only kind of saw them if we bumped into them in the kitchen, in which case they wouldn't talk to us. And yeah, I mean, I couldn't bring anybody home. I couldn't bring friends over. I definitely was embarrassed about it. And it wasn't until halfway through my freshman year of college that I actually realize, you know, I should own the fact that I was in foster care, and the only way it can be improved is if current and former foster youth like take a hold of it and actively pursue change within the system.
And speaking of that, we have resources at yourcallradio.org. If you're a former foster youth who's interested in speaking out and contributing to this resource center that Heather is putting together, you can find information there and contact her. Daniel, this question of stigma. Did you feel stigmatized by the foster system?
Yes and no. I think I was blessed to be in foster homes that did not alienate me like some others experienced. Although being in social places such as school, that's always a big one. Being in school, it is always a little awkward to bring it up because I don't think a lot of people are aware. They think they do have their own stigmas about the foster system and foster children. I mean, we are labeled as juvenile delinquents of the system. So it is, they have these preconceived notions. And when, I do, I guess, confess that I was a foster kid, people do react in certain ways. And that's okay for me. I too have learned how to embrace the fact that I was a foster kid. And in fact, I feel like I've, grown a lot for being so.
And ideally, you're kids hearing you talk empowers them to speak up as well. Let's go to more callers. Let's go to Nancy in Oakland. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to your call.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for this program.
Thank you for calling.
Uh-huh. I was a former foster child. I'm now 70, and I'm still dealing with it, and with my brother and sister as well. And we were separated, and the caseworker didn't tell us we weren't going to be able to have each other's phone numbers or addresses. And there was at least 4 years where we didn't have any contact, except for maybe a half an hour around the Christmas time in a parking lot or something. And so now we have all this difficulty trying to relate, because part of our experience when we were at home, we were close, but then we're strangers too, and we grew up in strangers' homes. So that's one issue I think is really important, that siblings need to be able to see each other often and have contact with each other all through the system if they're separated. And another is foster parents were told not to bond. And
not to bond with the kids?
Yes. And they said it's because we had parents somewhere and that would confuse us. So that meant that we were growing up in kind of like a vacuum, you know, where people would be sort of polite, but they were being careful not to bond. And it also made it weird, now that I'm looking back and learning, you know, trying to put it all together, that usually when you're a child, you have aunts and uncles and parents and other people around in your family who know what you were like at a particular age and remember a thing you did or something. But for a foster kid, most often, that's all a vacuum, and you can't go back and find out like what you were like or what the adults around you saw how you were. So that part of parenting is just evaporated. It's another part of the erasure of our usual human experience. And I agree with everybody who said that in general, both the caseworkers and the foster parents don't have sensitivity training to really see foster kids as human beings. And one of the things I've been trying to move toward is to have, like, some kind of a support group. I've gotten a lot of help from going to Al-Anon, because there was, two of my foster families were alcoholic, plus there was alcoholism in my family of origin. But it's helped me contain it, because otherwise you've got all these different families you're going to, and then you're just sort of out there on your own, and there isn't counseling to help you make the transition into adulthood, and no mentor to go to. So,
well, Nancy, thank you so much for sharing your experience, and it sounds like you were able to access some support services on your own and be successful. It might be good for you to contact Heather by going to yourcallradio.org and be part of her speaker series.
Yes, please.
Yes, I plan to do that. And also I would like to say teenagers, that Alateen can help, you know, just sort of begin to start to put it together, understand that you didn't cause it. And that you can't control it and you can't cure it, but you can learn to take care of yourself.
Well, thank you so much. Does anybody want to respond to Nancy? Or should we go to, we'll go to Lisa in San Anselmo. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to your call.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. First of all, I just want to say you sound like an outstanding panel of young people, and given all that you've been through. I'm trying to wrap my hands around and my head around the issue of where it's gone with social work and placement of foster kids, because one on the outside wants to believe that these kids are placed in really wonderful, nurturing homes that are looking to love these kids who've had to be displaced from their biological families. But if I'm picking up on some of this panel today, I'm realizing that that isn't necessarily what's happening, and it's a real shame. And it feels like a real overhaul that's needed within the social work system, because it was not what I thought was happening. As a parent of my own two children, what I'm wondering is what we could do, even though maybe we're not able to house a foster child at our home, but what can we do to volunteer, to be a mentor, to give back to kids in the foster system, and what role can we play?
All right, let's hear from our panel. Thank you so much for calling, Lisa. What can concerned people do?
There's a cool organization called CASAS. I'm not too sure what the acronym stands for, but CASAS are it's one CASA to one youth in foster care, and it's a one-on-one mentor program. I got my CASA when I was 19, and I believe my CASA may have been in her 50s, late 60s, but she was retired, and she took me around San Francisco, and I found the little treasures that I didn't know. Even it was going to, like, the windy road on Lombard Street. It's the little things that as being a youth from San Francisco, I didn't know things like that. So if you would love to volunteer for CASAs, that'd be awesome because youth need a one-on-one mentor.
And CASA is Court-Appointed Special Advocates. It's a national group, and I know we have it here in California. We'll put a link to that and other resources at yourcallradio.org. And just to talk a little bit more to Lisa, what else would you like to see people who care about this do?
I'm a student in the Guardian Scholars Program at San Francisco State, and I know that they're always looking for people who would be willing to, you know, take kids in for the holidays, maybe let them come to your Thanksgiving dinner, take them back to school shopping, maybe just hang out with them. Little things here that, you know, are really nice when you're maybe far away from where you grew up, going to school and feel kind of isolated, especially during the holidays when like all your friends go home and maybe you don't get that opportunity to go to a home.
So are there ways for people to plug in through the Guardian Scholars Program?
Yeah, you can go onto the San Francisco State University website and type in Guardian Scholars Program, and there'll be phone numbers and emails on the staff there on who to contact. And
both Nancy and Lisa brought up the idea of the placement system being flawed. And you talked about this in your own experiences with the foster care system. What choice do young people have in terms of where they're placed? Like, how much are you consulted? Katina's shaking her head and Heather's shaking her head.
We're not. I remember going to the Child Protective Service Center and just waiting for someone to pick me up. And then once I got picked up, it was a Pacific Island family. And me being African-American, that didn't match. And me thinking, am I going to eat chicken adobo for the rest of my life at this home? And I'm like, oh, my God, we don't get asked. It's not like an interview. They just, someone picks you up. And I feel like it's more like when people go grocery shopping, I need to pick a banana. I'm going to pick a banana. And they just keep on going. And it didn't last that long. I ended up AWOLing within like 8 hours. I didn't come back. I went to bed, snuck out the window, and never looked back at that home. So it's more like a pickup drop-off process, which is kind of scary because you don't know who's coming through that door. They don't tell you, oh, this family is coming to get you. You're just waiting for someone to come get you.
Joseph?
Yeah, that's very true. In my case as well, me and my brother, we stood at the Polinsky Center for just one night, and then the next morning a family came to pick us up. And when we do have court dates and as we get older, they do listen to what we recommend. And
in terms of like, I don't want to go to a group home.
Not necessarily. If more like, for example, in my scenario, I wanted to be with my brothers. So we pushed a lot to find a placement that would take all three of us. And that was difficult. And especially because some behavioral issues that did separate us. And for example, if you do have issues in certain placements, they will move you to facilities with higher structure, security, and things like that. So there are some situations where you don't really have a choice.
That's Joseph Backett. He grew up in Southern California and entered the foster care system when he was 11 years old. He's now attending UC Berkeley. We're also joined by Heather Matheson, who entered the foster care system in Southern California at 13. She is now a student at San Francisco State University. And Katina Jackson entered the foster care system in San Francisco when she was 4 years old. She's now an advocate with California Youth Connection. We'll put information about all of this at our website, which is yourcallradio.org. You can continue to post information there, comments there, resources there. Let's go to Renee in San Francisco. Hi, Renee. Welcome to your call.
Hi. I am calling from San Francisco Court-Appointed Special Advocates. And I wanted to ask the young people on the panel, as we begin to look at AB 12 and the support systems that we are putting in place, what can the community do, both nonprofits and government agencies, to better support the youth as they're transitioning out of foster care, particularly through the ages of 18 and 21?
Okay.
And it can be tangible or policies. What would they like to see?
Thank you so much. That was Renee, and she wants to know, what do you want to see? How could AB 12 work better? What support services do you need in that transition where most people are relying on their families?
I know it's taking me back to fourth grade where you got to bring your parent to a school. And you got to have your parent really say, hey, I was a firefighter. This is what I do on the 9-to-5, or this is what I do. And if we can do more community outings where the young people between the ages of 18 to 21 get exposed to those type of experiences, because you can't get exposed if you don't know. And if I didn't go on that Black College tour that I went to in 2008, I wouldn't have known where my roots or where my people came from. So I think exposing the young people to better options other than just saying a community college, other than just their TILT program, because I shouted out of many goals that I wanted to complete, but none of those goals had a deadline. We can shout out everything, but I never actually got any of those things done besides getting my case closed. So just kind of more hands-on, taking the kids to seeing more schools outside of California. I wanted to be a neurosurgeon. So my social worker got together with a team in San Francisco, and someone on the team had a neurosurgeon friend. So I went down to San Jose. I got all suited up to be a neurosurgeon. And then I realized I don't have a stomach for what's going on in the brain. But if I wouldn't have not known that, but me watching House, I wanted to go into neuroscience. I wanted to make all the money that House was making. But no one really sat down and said, hey, Katina, this is what's really, House is a show. So actually sitting down and really letting us know, like, it's the real world. Let us know what you went through from whatever college experience that you had, and letting us know when we get out in the real world, it's very expensive. Very expensive.
Yeah, Heather, thoughts on the transition. What social workers and caring adults can provide for you?
Yeah, well, to comment on what she just said, in the Guardian Scholars Program, they do something called Job Shadow Day, where once a year we get to go into different companies where they offered to like let us shadow one of their employees, get a feel for what that job is like, what their day-to-day is like. So that's really helpful. It definitely gave me a good idea of what working in the real world would be like. But other than that, I really think that a lot more should go into just making sure that while kids are in care, that they're being cared for. If while they're in care, they're being like loved, and their social worker is caring, and their foster parents are active in their lives, I think that that really will help the transition period, because, you know, they'll actually have some resources to call back on when they age out.
And you've definitely been vocal about this, about what works and doesn't with AB 12.
Right, right. And I think transitioning is such a critical time for foster youth. They're going from being in a very secure placement, or just at least being with a family that provides one way or another, to being independent. And that, well, at least for most foster youth who emancipate, and speaking for us who all went off to college, we are pretty much alone, and we are responsible for ourselves and our actions. And with resources like AB 12, we do get a stipend every month, and a lot of foster youth emancipate, get the stipend, and finally get this freedom and kind of go wild with it. And so I think what would be appropriate is for further mentoring or further assistance and guidance after graduation of high school, because there's still a lot of responsibilities that that come in with this real-world idea.
And we have more callers, but we only have a few minutes left in the show, and I wanted to just hear from each of you about kind of your top priorities of what you would change about the system, what you want social workers to be thinking about when they interact with young people. Joseph, why don't we start with you?
Well, as you know, one of my biggest issues has been with the situation of my brother. And so I wish there was a lot more focus on the discrepancies between foster youth and juvenile delinquents, because, as I said before, my brother was in the system for 5 years and he receives no benefits. I don't understand how that works out, you know. And so if I wish there was more focus on
and really attend to that a lot of foster kids are falling into the juvenile justice system,
right?
And maybe there are interventions that can be done there.
Right.
Heather, what are your top priorities?
My top priorities would definitely be making sure that youth are placed in homes that are suitable for the types of things that they've been going through their whole lives, like, you know, a loving environment that like cares for their needs. Social workers that take the time and can put themselves in the shoes of their youth and use that as a way to gauge the situation. I think that those are really important.
And Katina, we're going to give you the last word. What are your priorities?
My priorities would be to have the youth voice at every table, because the lawmakers don't know what we go through, and that social workers are just county welfare professionals, not treat us like a file, because we need to know what's really going on. Don't just throw us out in the real world and us not knowing what's really going on, because we don't have a real biological family there. So of course we're going to come homeless. Of course we're going to leave school. Of course we're going to be robbing the store, because that's all we know. So just keep us in your prayers and hope that the foster care system hopefully could stop.
And what if you were speaking to a judge right now about how to put that voice front and center in the system? What would you say in just 30 seconds here?
I would have a youth at every court hearing, being that mentor, just a youth there to kind of let the youth know what's really going on. Because I go to court, and I didn't know what was going on. I just heard all these mumma jumbers, and I signed something, and that was the end of that. Why am I there? Am I there to show that you pick me up for this attorney? So just to be there. And also keep in mind that we don't know what's going on. Kind of switch the lingo to our language, because we don't know.
And did CASA help in any of your cases, these youth advocates in the court system? Did anybody have a CASA advocate?
Yes, my CASA kind of took more than an hour up in court, because she had to translate, because I didn't know what the judge was saying, what was really going on. So my CASA was really that person for me. And if I didn't want to go to court, my CASA was there. And my CASA gave another view on who Katina was, and not what the paperwork said or what the county worker said.
And that is Katina Jackson, who spent time in foster care in San Francisco, entered that system at 4 years old. She's now an advocate with California Youth Connection. We will put a link to that organization at yourcallradio.org. We've also been joined by Heather Matheson, who entered the foster care system when she was 13. She's now a student in her fourth year at San Francisco State University. You can contact her by looking her up at yourcallradio.org if you want to join the former foster youth speakers bureau. And Joseph Backett grew up in Southern California, entered the foster care system at 11. He's now attending UC Berkeley. Congratulations to you all. Thank you for being here. We'll put more resources at yourcallradio.org. You can also leave resources and comments there. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. How can we create a democratic internet ecosystem? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with Astra Taylor, author of The People's Platform, Taking Back Power and Culture in the Digital Age. The book argues that for all we tweet and like and share, the internet in fact reflects real-world economic and cultural hierarchies. So what would a democratic internet look like? And how should we get there? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. Becca Hoekstra produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and David LaTulipe is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.